lonely where you are. Come back down, and I won't tell them your name. Hello, and welcome to Public Safety Talk Radio. I'm your host, Earl Brown, with the Public Safety Campus Police Department. Welcome back to joining the program. Sorry we are just a little bit late here. We do have Detective Kevin Fournier that's in the studio today. And as I told you before, he's going to be explaining the process on sexual assault and some other things that are good information to everyone. And there's been a lot of questions regarding sexual assault, restraining orders, etc. And he's going to go through all of that for you today with that information. So I'm going to introduce him, Detective Kevin Fournier. Thank you for joining the program.
Hi, how you doing, everyone? As Officer Brown said, my name is Kevin Fournier. I'm the Detective Sergeant with the Department of Public Safety. I believe there's a lot of people don't even realize that we have a detective unit. It actually came to be when the collaboration started between Hampshire and Mount Holyoke College. Times, as we know it, are starting to change quite a bit, and because of that, we want to be able to dedicate specific resources to investigate some of the more serious crimes that might happen amongst the three campuses and bring them to a end, you know, to a conclusion, whatever that conclusion might be. Earl talked to me earlier about talking about sexual assaults and some of the processes, and I actually explained to him that we have to kind of expand that a little bit, because when we're talking about sexual assaults, domestic violence incidents and harassment prevention orders also come to mind, and there's always been a little bit of confusion on what some of the differences are. I'm not huge on statistics. But basically, one out of every nine high school students has had some type of a sexual contact against his or her will here in Massachusetts alone. And out of that, there is a very minimal amount that ever get reported to the police for a variety of reasons. Embarrassment is one of the things that comes to mind. As in a lot of cases, people think that they might have brought it on themselves, which isn't true. They're afraid of the process. They may not have confidence in the criminal justice system. Those are just a few of the reasons why people are afraid to come forward.
Mm-hmm.
I want to let you know that a sexual assault is probably the most heinous thing that can ever happen to an individual, and it's something that's very, very personal to them. Public safety will never force anyone to go forward with criminal charges. Our focus, when we have someone who does come forward, that takes a lot of courage to begin with. Our real concern is the well-being of that individual. And then we can worry about the criminal aspect later on. And when I'm talking about well-being, I'm talking about things such as, do they need any type of physical assistance? Do they need medical attention? We want to determine whether or not it's someone that they knew or someone they didn't know. And of course, we have to always be in consideration of where it happened. As a college or any of the colleges have a specific responsibility to send out a page or send out some type of mass notification if it's an unknown individual who may have perpetrated this act versus someone that you may have known or may have had a dating relationship with. And that goes for anyone. It, you know, typically when you think of a sexual assault, you think male on female. But it can be the exact opposite. It can be female on male, it can be male on male, female on female, or any combination. So the first thing we typically do is have you come in. They would call in. We want to make sure you're safe, number one. Is the person still in the area? Are you in any danger? We'll send officers to respond to your location to make sure that you're safe or eliminate that harm. They're typically going to call in myself or my associate, Detective Jennifer Galvin. And we are the people that respond to all major crimes, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It doesn't matter when it is. We'll respond, and then we'll take over the scene from there. And then we'll make sure that all the services needed are delivered. We like to think that as a victim, you're in the driver's seat. We explain the steps, step by step, what we're going to do, how we're going to do it. And there's a lot of things that can happen. You know, are there concerns about sexually transmitted diseases? Are there bruises, marks, cuts? Was it against your force? Were you intoxicated? If you're a female, are you worried about pregnancy? You know, a lot of times we talk about a SANE exam, which is a sexual assault nurse examiner. These are nurses that are specifically trained to collect evidence. Now, even if you don't want to go through with criminal charges, we want to have the opportunity to collect the evidence and kind of freeze it in that state. And of course, the fresher it is, the better evidence that we can collect, and the more chance of a successful prosecution if in the future you want to go down that route. But nothing, your decision doesn't have to be made when we initially make contact.
Exactly.
Again, it's a very personal thing. As you go through the process, you'll be telling the story to myself or Detective Galvin. You'll be telling it when you get examined by the nurse examiner. But our primary concern is your well-being, and then the criminal aspect or anything else can follow after that.
Right, and this is a lot of really, really good information, because I know, like I said, with the questions that we've had in the past regarding that, a lot of information, a lot of individuals are unsure of the process, and sometimes we can understand that, you know, just the fact of bringing the police into this matter, and the fact that you may feel guilty or you feel like it was your fault. We want you to know it's not your fault and you shouldn't feel guilty, but we'll give you time to make that decision. It's your choice, but we do have certain things that we have in place that we're there to assist you and get you the assistance that you need.
Well, there's a lot of things such as doing things that are just inherently dangerous and placing yourself in that situation, whether unknowingly or otherwise. Two of the colleges that we serve are all women's colleges.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly there are people who may try to make contact over the internet, Facebook, chat rooms, things of that nature, to try and get an inroads in.
Right.
You know, one of the things we've always suggested, if you're meeting someone that you've met over the internet, for example, and they want to come to your campus and meet in a public place.
Right.
You know, here at Hampshire, you could be meeting in the library, the airport lounge. Could go into Amherst, have a slice of pizza somewhere,
mm-hmm.
sit down and chat with that person. There's other people around.
Exactly. And that's good, because it's very important that you meet in the public place, someone, if you've been dealing with them over the internet, just to get to know each other. You know, you never know who exactly you're dealing with over the internet.
Sure. Like anything, there's a bunch of predators that are out there.
Mm-hmm.
And they like to prey on a college age population.
Right.
Some of these individuals are very worldly in their approaches, and they're very well practiced and well rehearsed.
Right.
You know, you want to keep yourself out of dangerous situations whenever you can.
Right. And this is where a lot of information about internet safety comes into play, because you have so much. You know, you have your Facebook, you have Twitter, and you have MySpace. There's so many resources you can use over the internet to communicate, mm-hmm. and a lot, and, you know, in the dating services that you have out there. So there's just so much going on. So we like everyone to just be a little bit more aware and take certain precautions when you're communicating, and don't give out your personal information over the internet as well.
No, absolutely not. I can't tell you how many times we've done investigations on things such as identity theft and so on and so forth, or information that was given out and people weren't even fully aware that they had done that. There's a lot of scams that are actually out there.
Mm-hmm.
When you start down that path, you know, what you typically would happen, you know, and people think that even when you're in a relationship that you can't be sexually assaulted.
Right.
Or that, geez, I was drunk, or that person was intoxicated, whatever the case might be. So it wasn't really a sexual assault.
Mm-hmm.
When you're intoxicated, you can't give consent. And consent is part of, we're looking at a consensual act between two people to make it not a sexual assault.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay. And that's very key also, Kevin, because you notice you have two people that's been drinking, they're intoxicated, you know, and things happen. And then usually later on, the person didn't give their consent. You know, and we try to really educate people and make them aware of that. That's why this information is so important, that they, you know, take these precautions, you know, just be careful when you're out there. I mean, we don't want to make people paranoid to go out and have a good time, but you just want to use certain precautions and just be aware of the things you're doing and the things that's going on around you. And it also goes for the friends, you know, when you're going out with a group of friends, you know, you try to watch out for one another.
Sure, you know, the old saying of that person, my wingman, or whatever the case might be.
Yeah.
You know, when someone does come in and they want to report a sexual assault, one of the questions that we have to ask them is, where did this occur? And it has to do with jurisdictional prosecution. We are responsible for the campuses of Smith, Mount Holyoke, and Hampshire College. We are the police departments on that. So any crimes that occur within those boundaries, it is our responsibility to investigate. And certainly, depending on the scope and nature of an investigation, we may get assistance from other agencies.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, there's certain crimes and certain incidents that have to be investigated by specialties, if you will, such as the State Police Detective Unit.
Right.
They have certain crimes which only can be investigated by them. We work together. It's always a mutual thing going back and forth. And we do make the Amherst Police Department aware of what's going on. But using that as an example, if someone comes in and says, I was sexually assaulted in the town of Amherst, we won't start an investigation. We won't ask the person particulars of a crime.
Mm-hmm.
What we will actually do is we will arrange and assist them in going forward to the Amherst Police Department.
Right.
If it means that myself or my partner wind up driving them to the Amherst Police Department and assisting them in filing a report,
mm-hmm.
that's the way it would work. And we have had people, I can tell you in the past, I've had people come from New York City and say, I was, you know, sexually assaulted in New York.
Right.
In that case, it isn't practical for us to drive them to New York, and certainly we don't want to feel as if they've been abandoned. And I have worked with New York City Police Department Special Victims Unit
mm-hmm.
to provide certain services. For example, we were able to assist in getting a sane exam done at the Cooley Dickinson Hospital. I took custody of the kit, and I was able to transfer it to, I met the NYPD officers, and actually transferred, so we have a good chain of custody.
Right.
So if
right.
they go forward. But certainly if it happens within another jurisdiction, we're going to do everything we can to assist.
Right. So they're going to get support no matter what from our department. We'll help them.
Our department is very, very good in giving victims of crimes a very large amount of support.
Mm-hmm.
A lot more than typically you'd find in municipal departments. And it's not because municipal departments don't want to be able to offer this level, but we have a very special community here that we deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And in some aspects, it's a big family within the whole collegiate community, and we like to think of it as in that manner.
Right.
When we're talking about things like that, you know, if you start going beyond the realm of a sexual assault alone, it also gets into other crimes that are perpetrated against individuals, such as a domestic violence incident or a harassment prevention order type incident. And I can kind of explain the difference between the two. If you had, for example, if you had just dated someone and a sexual assault were to occur, in the old days, You know, it was considered date rape, and some people refer to it in that manner.
Yeah.
However, if you went to the courts and wanted to get a restraining order against that individual, more often than not, the court could not grant the restraining order. The reason being, when you're looking at the abuse prevention order, or as we commonly call it, a restraining order, the word or the verbiage states that there's a substantial dating relationship.
Right.
Now, even though it's certainly something very large happened on that one evening, they don't consider that a dating relationship. That was a single date. Under the new law, the harassment prevention order came out, the 258E, on May 10th of last year. And what it did allow for is a victim of a sexual assault, whether it was a prolonged dating relationship or not, to file for that order.
Right, right.
And then at that point, it afforded them some protection. You know, when we talk to victims, as I stated before, we like to put them kind of in the driver's seat.
Mm-hmm.
One of our tasks or one of our goals is to give them options. Okay, I can't force anyone to go to court and to be a victim and to press charges if they are unwilling to go forward.
Right.
And a lot of people are unwilling to go forward. It's a very hard thing to do, no matter how much support that you have to assist you through the process.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So there are other options. For example, a person who has been sexually assaulted, if they decided they didn't want to go forward with a charging that person with sexual assault, there's a potential they could get a harassment prevention order or a restraining order, depending on their situation.
Right.
Certainly the person can be trespassed against or from the campuses, so they can't step foot on the college property.
Right, right.
So it's a myriad of options that can occur. Nothing has to happen right there on the spot at that exact moment in time.
And that's very, very important. And I think just with you mentioning that, it kind of clears it up a little bit, because there are questions, and some concern if someone should come to us to report these things. And sometimes we hear about it later on. One thing I want to ask you, Kevin, can you explain a little bit about the third-party reporting? There's been some questions about that as well.
Okay, what actually a third-party report is. Typically, we do have information that comes from us from another source that a sexual assault has occurred. Within realms, certain realms, there's confidentiality issues that arise.
Mm-hmm.
It's important for Cleary statistics that we get concise and accurate information on any crimes that occur within a college community. The deans or the mental health people may come forward and say a sexual assault has been reported on campus, and it gathers certain information, but no names are divulged. No exact times, locations, anything of that nature. The same way if a victim comes forward to us, there is a very, very limited window of people that are actually able to see the report. It's
right.
a need-to-know basis, I guess, is the best way to explain it.
Right.
It doesn't get released to the general public. It doesn't get spread around the dean's offices or things of that nature.
Right.
If any information is shared, then it's with the victim's or the survivor, which is the appropriate term, the survivor's permission.
Right, right. And that's good.
And it also helps open up some avenues.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, if they're having problems, there's a lot of things that can happen after a sexual assault. And if they're having problems in certain areas, perhaps the deans can assist in some manner. Certainly it's not a free pass or anything, but certainly makes the situation a lot more understandable.
Right, and I know the deans help out in different ways as far as, say, if it's an incident that happened with, just say, hypothetically, two students on campus,
mm-hmm.
and maybe they take the same class, now we have to look into one of the students, you know, being removed, you know, because you got to separate them at that time. So I know there's some points where the deans do come in so they can actually move those classes, so they can separate these two individuals while we're doing an investigation.
That's correct, and it's you want to remember that ultimately the investigation is a very thorough process which has to occur.
Mm-hmm.
It's, as we talked about originally, the SANE exam. It's not that we're having that because, Jesus, I have biological evidence that can be obtained, and now I'm going to prosecute. That stays in a matter of stasis. I actually wind up holding on to that information, that exam kit, for over 7 years.
Right, right.
It can't be destroyed. It's under lock and key. There's what we call a chain of custody or a chain of possession on that. So anyone who may have come in contact with that or even per se touched it within that the time period that's been in there, it shows it hasn't been tampered with, no one can be falsely accused, things of that nature. And again, people may say, no, I want to put this behind me, I don't want to follow through with it. We're still holding on to it for their benefit.
Exactly.
You know, it's not for ours, it's for their benefit. Something may change in their life where they decide they want to go forward.
Okay. So you're saying that, say, a person just says maybe 2-3 years later they decide they want to come forward with this information, we have that information that's been sitting there pretty much in custody.
As far as, like, the sexual assault kit?
Yeah, yeah.
Typically, we will have certain information if we're bringing the person to get the kit done.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, again, it's very limited, and that's why we only have two people who are the primary investigators for sexual assaults on the campuses.
Right, right.
We take it into custody, and it stays in that state of suspended animation, if you will,
right,
for a time period. Now, if the person decides later on they want to go forward, you have to remember, we have to gather evidence while it's fresh.
Right, very important.
You know, we've had people who have talked to us about sexual assaults that happened years ago. And the problem you run into is memories fade, people move away,
yeah,
details change. It's very hard to prove that type of case. We'll spend an extreme amount of time trying to build the case. If the person wants to go forward, that can be successfully prosecuted in court.
Mm-hmm.
Then ultimately what we'll do is we'll go to the district attorney who handles the sexual assaults, present them our case. They'll review it, and they may say, well, I need more of this or more of that, or do you have this other slant we can put on it?
Right, right.
And they'll give an honest opinion as to whether or not there's a chance of a successful prosecution in court.
Right.
You know, again, our primary concern is the victim.
Right, and this is good because we want to put as much information out there just so they have a better understanding of the process. Well, what I want to do, Kevin, if you don't mind taking any phone calls, I want to put the number out there. Maybe if
sure.
there's some listeners out there that have some questions for you, maybe they can call into the show. That number is 559-6766. That's 559-6766. And right now we're going to take a break. You listen to Public Safety Talk Radio, and we will be right back. Again, 559-6766.
Thank you.
Okay, welcome back to the program. Again, this is Public Safety Talk Radio, and we have Detective Sergeant Kevin Fournier with the Department of Public Safety Campus Police Department that's joining us today, giving out a lot of information about sexual assault, restraining orders, and the new harassment law. Very important information for those of you that wasn't sure about that. And I know what the harassment law is relatively new, and we wanted to really explain that so you can see that you have other options as well. And a lot of these options and resources you have within your campus police department, you can reach out to us. So Kevin, you know, it's great that you joined the show today with this type of information. Is there any other points you want to touch on?
Well, there's a couple things, Earl. And people aren't always cognizant or aware of. We talked before about investigations and the concerns that some individuals may have that if they come to public safety, they have to immediately say, yes, I want to go forward, I want to press charges against that individual, and that within the next 20 minutes, the person's going to be in handcuffs and going to jail. That's not the way that the law works. In fact, there's only a couple laws that say specifically that you shall arrest. If officers respond to an incident where it's a domestic violence incident between two individuals, they've had a dating relationship, one person's trying to harm the other individual, and officers see indicators such as bruises, bleeding, black and blue marks, so on and so forth, a bunch of things that we've been trained to look for.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the few laws where it says you shall arrest,
right,
instead of you may arrest. Okay, that is the preferred response. And if you don't arrest, better be able to indicate why that didn't happen. And over my years, I've seen not only a lot of incidents where males have been abusive towards females, but I've also seen where females have been totally abusive towards males.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
And
exactly.
The females have been arrested, so everything's kind of fair. The difference between the restraining order, the abuse prevention order, versus the harassment order is part of that dating relationship. A lot of times people think they can come forward for a restraining order, but they have to satisfy certain criteria.
Right.
For example, there has to be some type of relationship. It has to be what the court refers to as a substantial dating relationship. But that also can extend to things such as parents, children, siblings, where you can go to the court and say, and again, you're in imminent fear of your safety.
Right.
So you think something terrible is going to happen to you. And it has to be based, some concrete base on that. It can't be, well, geez, I remember 8 years ago, somebody punched me in the nose. And I'm afraid he's going to come back and do it again, but you haven't seen that individual for 8 years.
Right.
There's no imminent fear. There's nothing that a reasonable person would say out of the blue this individual would show up. But we will say, let's use a typical example. Officers get called to a scene. There's a fight between two people who are in a relationship, whether it's boyfriend, girlfriend, or any combination of other situations. Typically, what is going to happen is the parties are going to be separated. If we see a known aggressor, or we're able to determine who the aggressor is, that person very well may be arrested on spot because of the assault and battery.
Right.
And then we are going to help somebody obtain an emergency restraining order. And that can be done 24 hours a day, 7 days a week over the phone. There's judges on call specifically for that purpose. So we'll use the example of this happen on a Friday evening when the courts aren't open.
Right.
So what would happen at that point in time is we'd make the phone call, we'd get a hold of the judge on duty. He could issue an emergency restraining order, which would be good until Monday morning when the courts reopened again.
And you can give him basically the information right over the phone and he'll make his determination.
That is correct. If the aggressor is in custody, he or she will be served a copy of that emergency restraining order as well. telling them they're not supposed to go near you. We'll use you as the victim, Earl.
Okay.
That, and I promise I won't hurt you here. That they can't contact you in any way, shape, form, or manner by telephone, email, texting, having a friend talk to you, whatever the case might be. They cannot have any contact with you whatsoever. They'll typically set up a radius or a distance that the individual would have to stay away from you. So typically it's 100 yards or better. If I am not a student here at Hampshire College and you are, then they would ban me from coming on the college.
Right.
Because I have no business, no legitimate purpose for being here.
Exactly. You want to keep the individual safe.
Right. If you work the job outside of here, I could be banned from going to where your place of work is. And there's a plethora of other options that can occur during this.
Okay.
Monday morning rolls around. You, as the victim, have to go to court if you want to extend the order. Typically, one of the things that we'll do is we'll escort you to the court. Either myself or my partner will make sure, if you would like our assistance, to bring you to the court and help you through that process to extend that order. If the other individual's been served, they have the right to be in court and try and defend why the order should not be extended as well.
Right, right.
But we'll be with you as kind of a buffer to make sure no harm befalls you. Using a different example, if it happened Monday through Friday, you know, during an 8-to-4 type situation, we may try to bring you to the court immediately to obtain a temporary restraining order.
Okay.
If the other party isn't there, typically the judge is going to issue an order if he finds probable cause or enough reason to do it. We'll issue an order that's good from anywhere from 5 days to 2 weeks so that the other party can be contacted and, again, has the opportunity to tell his or her side of the story in court. Once the judge hears that information, they can extend the order for a given amount of time. Anywhere from 3 months, I've seen it in some cases where it's been extended for a lifetime.
Right.
So that's what people are typically aware of when we talk about a restraining order, or what we call in Massachusetts a 209A order. The harassment prevention orders can issue the same types of rules or penalties, but there is a different set of criteria that have to happen. For example, in a 209 order or restraining order, we know there's already a dating relationship.
Mm-hmm.
There, if there's forced sex against your will, that also can trigger a restraining order. If there's other situations such as physical abuse or a plethora of other criteria, that falls very neatly under that umbrella. But as I said before, when we're talking about a date rape where you just met the individual, they can't prove the dating relationship. But that is a criteria that can be used for a harassment prevention order.
Right.
And it's also when you have three incidents that have occurred that are meant to basically shock and alarm you.
Right.
For example, you do something knowing that it's going to cause me distress, emotional, psychological, whatever the case might be. Three documented incidents that are heinous enough, you can go forward to the court and say, I want a harassment prevention order. This person is harassing me for this reason. And here's the three times that it happened, three or more times.
Right.
But they have to have occurred since May 10th of last year. It can't be this happened 10 years ago, this happened 5 years ago, and it happened today.
Right, right.
It has to be since the order's been in effect.
Yeah, so that's good information there, because I know that there's questions around that. I want to go back a minute. And ask you a question. As far as if we have a student that comes to school here,
mm-hmm.
at any one of the campuses, and
sure.
say they have a restraining order that they're bringing with them from their home state, can you talk a little bit about what we do with that information if they come to us?
Oh, absolutely. If somebody has obtained a abuse prevention order or restraining order from another state. We really want to be aware of it. And the reason being is, number one, most states have reciprocity.
Mm-hmm.
So if you obtained their equivalent of a restraining order in New York, it's still very valid here. If you're a member of our community and living on our campuses and there's a violation of that order, we as the police department for this jurisdiction can actually file the court paperwork to charge the individual with whatever the crime's been.
Okay.
And we also say the same thing. If something happens here and you live in another community, whether it's out within Massachusetts or anywhere in the United States, you're now going home. You've obtained a restraining order while you've been here. You're going home for whether it be a vacation or summer vacation or J-term. It's always a very good idea to go forward to the, you know, local police departments and make them aware that the restraining order exists and give them a copy of it.
Exactly.
We also recommend you carry a copy on you at all times.
Exactly. And that's important also if you come across a situation and you speak with another officer, you have it to show to them as well, so that's good.
Right. It saves a lot of time with mm-hmm. them having to look things up, so whatever action they take can be a little bit more immediate.
Right.
And it reminds you whether or not the restraining order is still in effect or if it's been dropped.
Right. Yeah, that's good information there, because I know that a lot of the students are coming in. Sometimes they may have questions about that. So I wanted to kind of put that out there to see if there's anyone listening, if this is something that that they can relate to. We can put that information so they have a better definition of it. Yeah.
Students are here to learn, to be able to learn without having the other things hang over your head, without those other encumbrances, is very, very important. You know, their college education and their college experience should be a good thing. They should look back fondly and say, you know, geez, I had a great time here. You know, part of our job is to make sure that they're safe here.
Right. And I think that's, one of the things that we do is part of our job is to make sure that, students, faculty, and staff, you know, everyone's safe on campus. So even when they're busy, going about their day, working, doing classes, and I know, you know, everyone has a busy day, a lot going on. Our role is to make sure that everyone's safe. So that's what we're doing 24 hours a day.
You know, you mentioned earlier during break when we were talking that it's a perception that, you know, anyone that commits a crime, no matter how minor it may appear, is immediately going to be arrested, go to jail, go through the court system, and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of things that actually happen, part of which is who is the victim involved. We're going to say, Earl, that you had something, an interaction with somebody, and you're a student here, and it was something which borderline could maybe be arrestable,
mm-hmm.
or even if it could be arrestable, it's risen to that level. Even in that situation, you do have some control as the victim. If we're talking a student-on-student situation.
Right, yep.
Because there are other, you know, nothing says we have to put that person in cuffs and bring them down and fingerprint them and do the whole nine yards. It's certainly an option. And if you are very vehement about it and you say, no, I want to see that person criminally prosecuted, if we've got probable cause and they have broken this particular law, well, certainly that can happen. But you may also look at it and say, you know, this person made a mistake. You know, what he did wasn't, or she did, wasn't right. But certainly I don't want to see him busting rocks at a federal prison over a minor transgression.
Right.
An alternative way of dealing with this can be through some of the judicial systems
mm-hmm.
that are located on the various campuses.
Right. Because we have a lot of resources here with the dean's offices, et cetera. And, I mean, a lot of the students, they know the different avenues that they can take for these resources and who they can go to and speak with for information. And we just want to let them know that we're also another resource that they can reach out to as well that'll help try to guide them and explain things and you know, assist them with the dean's office if we if they request it.
I've seen some pretty important cases taken on by the various collegiate judicial systems that are in place.
Mm-hmm.
Again, you know, part of our job is to be able to show options,
right,
to people. We don't want to force or coerce anyone into doing anything by any means. Again, we're there. We're a resource. We're there to help.
Right, exactly. And I think this has been a lot of really good information. I know I hope a lot of people did tune into the show because we really appreciate you stopping in, joining the program today.
I thought you were getting misty on me there for a second. I didn't know.
Yeah, just a little bit. Yeah, but it's been really good with the program. Again, this is Public Safety Talk Radio, and we have Detective Sergeant Kevin Fournier joining us today. For those of you who are just now tuned in, we're going to take another short break. We're going to be ending the show soon, so I'm going to give out the number again. And if you'd like to call in and ask any questions, please feel free to do so. That number is 559-6766, and we'll be right back.
I can see through you, seen in the rear.
By the name of Lupe Fiasco, representing that first and 15, yeah, and this one right here, I dedicate this one right here to all my homies out there grinding, you know what I'm saying, legally and illegally, you know what I'm talking about, so check it out, First got it when he was six, didn't know any tricks. Matter of fact, first time he got on it, he slipped, landed on his hip and busted his lip. For a week he had to talk with a lisp like this. Now we can end the story right here, but shorty didn't quit, it was something in the air. Yeah, he said it was something so appealing, he couldn't fight the feeling, something about it. He knew he couldn't doubt it, couldn't understand it. Branded, since the first kickflip he landed, labeled a misfit, a bandit, cocoon, 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 his neighbors couldn't stand it, so he was banished to the park. Started in the morning, one stopped after dark. Yeah, when they said it's getting late in here, so I'm sorry, young man, there's no skating here. And so we kick, push, kick, push, kick, push, kick, push, coast. And away he rolled, just a rebel to the world with no place to go. And so we kick, push, kick, push, kick, push, kick, push, coast. So come escape with me, just a rebel looking for a place to be. So let's kick and push and coast.
My man got a little older, became a better roller. Yeah, no helmet, hell bent on killing himself is what his mama said, but he was feeling himself. Got a little more swag in his style. Met his girlfriend, she was clapping in the crowd. Love is what was happening to him now. He said I would marry you, but I'm engaged to these Ariels and Varials, and I don't think this board is strong enough to carry two. She said, bow, I weigh 120 pounds. Now, let me make one thing clear, I don't need to ride yours, I got mine right here. So she took him to a spot he didn't know about, some odd in the apartment parking lot. She said, I don't normally take dates in here. Security came and said, I'm sorry, there's no skating here. And so they kick, push, kick, push, kick, push, kick, push, coast. And the way they roll, just lovers intertwined with no place to go. And so they kick, push, kick, push, kick, push, kick, push, coast. So come escape with me, just a rebel looking for a place to be. So let's kick and push, yeah, yeah, and coast.
Yeah, swank it. Yeah, yeah. Before he knew he had a crew that wasn't no punk, and they spit fire shirts and SB dunks. They would push till they couldn't skate no more. Office building lobbies wasn't safe no more, and it wasn't like they wasn't getting chased no more. Just the freedom was better than breathing, they said. An escape route they used to escape out. When things got crazy, they needed to break out. They'd head to any place with stairs, any good grinds, the world was theirs. and they four wheels would take them there until the cops came and said there's no skating here. And so they kick, push, kick, push, kick, push, kick, push, coast. And the way they roll, just rebels without a cause with no place to go. And so they kick, push, kick, push, kick, push, kick, push, coast. So come roll with me, just a rebel looking for a place to be. So let's kick, and push, yeah, yeah, and coast.
Public Safety Talk Radio. Detective Sergeant Kevin Fournier joining us today on the program. We're going to be ending the show. It was a pleasure doing the show and having all the listening audience out there tuning in today. Kevin, thank you for coming to the show. I know you've been very busy, but we really needed to put this information out there to the community. So I think that there's a wealth of information out here that they receive from the program and that they can go back later on and listen to as well.
Well, there's always a lot of information that can be imparted. As I said before, I'm not big on statistics and whatnot because they can be skewed in a lot of different situations. However, we do know what the statistics are mm-hmm. on sexual assaults and so on and so forth that occur. I encourage anyone, if they want to discuss this matter further, if they want to talk to us, if they want to try and understand the process a little bit better, we're always there to help.
Exactly.
Again, time of day or night doesn't matter. Our staff is patrolling the campuses 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And we have a very large percentage of officers that are actually trained in investigation of sexual assaults, but myself and the other detective are the ones who specifically do the investigations. Right. It's all about their safety,
exactly.
Their well-being.
So. Exactly. And also, I'd like to mention again, you know, we have the associate directors, and I want to mention that all three of the campuses, you know, associate director, Ray LaBar for Hampshire College, and you have the associate director, Barbara Riggi, that's at Mount Holyoke College, and you have Scott Graham, he's located over at Smith College. And I want to put that out there because we're one department that patrols all three of the campuses, and each one of these associate directors and the detectives, we move around to the campuses and visit, and we have officers that move around as well. But we have officers that are assigned to each campus specifically. But sometimes you may be over at Smith College, you may be at Mount Holyoke College, and you may see me. You'll see Detective Kevin Fournier or any one of the other officers that you're familiar with at different times, you know, so you will bump into us. So, you know, at any time you want to speak with an officer, you have any questions, concerns about anything, you just want to say hello, just reach out to us. That's what we're here for.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah. So, again, thank you for joining Public Safety Talk Radio, the show Today you had Detective Sergeant Kevin Fournier and myself, Earl Brown. If you have any questions or concern, you can always feel free to send me an email or stop by my office, which is on the second floor of the Johnson Library, room number 207. Again, everyone have a good day.